Hello and welcome to the Pre-Raphaelite Society podcast, brought to you by the Pre-Raphaelite Society. Today we are across the pond. We're talking to two special guests all the way from America. We are talking to Kyle Cassidy and Trillion Stars about a really interesting project they've got going, a photography project based on the poetry of Elizabeth Siddal. So I'll read you their bios, and then I'll hand over to them to explain a little bit more. So, Kyle Cassidy is a visual artist and photographer who's done a number of books, among them the viral sensation, This Is What a Librarian Looks Like, which is made up of portraits of and interviews with more than 300 librarians, as well as two books with Sandman creator Neil Gaiman. He has done three album covers for musicians and horror movie director John Carpenter, and most recently has worked with arachnologist Dr. Katerina Scott to create a book about 135 days in the life of a spider. Arachnologist makes sense now. Trillion Stars, who acts under the name of Jennifer Summerfield, is primarily a stage actor and has played many of the roles actors dream of. She has played both Nora Helmer and Christine in A Doll's House, Olga in Chekhov's Three Sisters, and Lady Macbeth multiple times, as well as Medea, Marie Antoinette, Ada Lovelace, and she has toured with one woman production. She has toured a one woman production of psychological horror story The Yellow Wallpaper. She's also played Brutus, Horatio, and Professor Van Helsing. In 2020, she wrote and performed a one-woman show and later film, Mary Shelley, Strange Star, about the author who did so much more than write that one book people know. They have a long history of collaboration together. They produced a film of Henrik Ibsen's proto-feminist play, Hedda Gabler, adapted his 1879 play, A Doll's House, to take place during lockdown in 2020, and made a film of that. They've worked together on cookbooks, knitting books, travel books, and raising cats. They once threw a dressmaking and jeweling party to promote Trillion's production of Sense and Sensibility. And they're both from Philadelphia in the United States. Wow, that is quite a bio, Kyle and Trillion. Fantastic. But you've been up to some exciting things.
Sounds so much better when you say it.
You wrote it. It's fantastic. And talking of interesting projects, I'm going to hand over to you now. Can you tell us a little bit about this photography project that you've got going on at the moment?
Sure. It's a series of photographs, loosely inspired by the poetry of Elizabeth Siddal. And it was a confluence of accidents that made it happen. First, we discovered that a high-end camera manufacturer Hasselblad had inexplicably come out with a cell phone attachment in 2018 that immediately fell into well-deserved obscurity. And it's a Hasselblad branded zoom lens that snaps onto the front of a Motorola Z phone. And this is a company that makes the best cameras in the world. They're like $7,000 a piece, and they had no business making a cell phone attachment. And the reviews were universally withering. And because of that, they're all over eBay now for $35. And I thought, oh, I have to have one of these. And I hate process photography, right? Like, I hate people who say, like, oh, I'm going to do this project. I'm going to use this camera in this film or whatever. But I felt compelled to try and take really great photos with this really terrible camera. And the second thing that happened was that one of our friends in London went away for a month and asked if we could cat sit. So we were in London for a month with nothing to do. And the third accident is that we're working on a real, quote unquote, real Pre-Raphaelite project, which we can't talk about now, but I'm sure you'll be excited about when we can. And because of that, we were reading the letters of Dante Rossetti. And we came across this poem by Elizabeth Siddal in one of Michael Rossetti's books, and it was just fantastic. And we started to try and find other poems of hers, and Rossetti, Michael Rossetti had printed 15 of them. And while we were in London reading these poems, they just started to infiltrate the photographs that we were taking. And at some point, I started posting some of the pictures that we were taking with some lines from the poems. And they were immediately extraordinarily well received. And as we kept doing this, we eventually thought, like, oh, this is something bigger than we thought it was. So we deleted most of the stuff that we posted. We told everybody, hold on, we're going to do this the right way, and we're going to do it bigger, and we're going to do it better. And so we are doing a Kickstarter to launch a book of these photos. And it will also include two different types of books of the mostly complete poetry of Elizabeth Siddal, because she's never had a popular edition of her poems out. And we wanted to make something that is beautiful, has everything that's publicly available in it, and so that people could read her poems in the way that we did, although not trying to track them down through Michael Rossetti's biographies. And then those would exist as a companion volume to our book of photographs, which has five of the poems in it.
Yeah, we were struggling a bit with how many poems to include in the actual hardcover book. The
Yes.
book, by the way, is called This Is Only Earth, My Dear, which is a line from one of Elizabeth Siddal's poems. But we were struggling because we wanted to honor Elizabeth Siddal, and we had no idea she was a poet. You know, we knew her through Rossetti's paintings. And then we were so fortunate because the Tate Gallery's exhibit of the Rossettis came to Delaware, which is very
Yes.
close to where we live in Philadelphia. So a couple of weeks before we left for London, we made a point of going. We have both independently loved the Pre-Raphaelites, and we both thought we have to catch this. We can't risk not seeing it. So we took the train to Wilmington and then took an Uber because we don't have a car. And it was this pilgrimage that we made to the Delaware Museum of Art. And that was really my introduction to Elizabeth Siddal as an artist in her own right, and as this person behind the muse, you know, this person with desires who had artistic leanings and ambitions. And we both just, I think, Kyle, you were fascinated with her before that exhibit, but for me, that's when I started to really think about Elizabeth Siddal as a human being, and then discovering her poems on top of that. It was just like, wow, this woman with this emotional interior life was just fascinating.
I guess it inflated her, right? From a two-dimensional being to a three-dimensional person. And her poems are so, like, contemporary, and they're so filled with passion and emotion and a real feeling that I get that I don't get from reading her husband's poems. You know, her husband is writing about medieval damsels, and she is literally begging God to let her die. You know, so these are things that I think are much more relatable now than maybe they were during the Victorian era. Christina Rossetti declined publishing them in a book of her poetry when Dante suggested it, and they've never been really published before. There are a few academic editions, and there was a 1978 edition, but there's no, like, you can't go to the bookstore and and say, oh, I'd like a little pocketbook of Elizabeth Siddal's poems to carry around in the in the park and read them.
Yeah, that's true. There are academic versions published, but you are right. It would be nice to be able to go and buy a beautiful copy of Elizabeth Siddal's poetry. One of the questions I was going to ask you was actually how you first came across Siddal. I think you've I answered that in your fantastic start there. But how about the Pre-Raphaelites in general? Because I know you've worked around this area, sort of with Gothic fiction in the past. So how did you find the Pre-Raphaelites?
Well, I don't know if it's the same there, but in America, when you're in college, I think there's a law that you either have to have Ophelia, a poster of Ophelia, a poster of the Lady of Shalott, or a poster of Christina's World on your wall. Like, those are the only things that are allowed in American dorm rooms. So, I'm sure I discovered the Pre-Raphaelites in college. And then I was an English literature major, so we read, Rossetti, who's still considered a titan in the poetry world. So, it's just one of those things for me that was just always part of my life, and we had a Waterhouse poster hanging in our bathroom for years. But I don't know how you found
Yeah, similar. I wish that there had been this aha moment
them.
that I'd written in my diary, like, oh, I just discovered the best artists. But similarly to Kyle, and certainly be having an interest in theater, I'm the Ophelia painting by Millais was something that was always in my consciousness in high school, and I certainly had a poster of it in my college room as inspiration. And it's interesting that that is Elizabeth Siddal, and
Yes.
I never thought of her as a model. And then later in college, I studied art history, and so I would read Ruskin's art criticisms, and was very titillated by all of the scandals in his life with Effie and Millais. And then later in New York, I think to me, I've always been interested in the things that make these people flesh and blood. And so there was a play when I lived in New York in the late 90s called The Countess, which was about the Effie Gray and John Everett Millais romance and the dissolution of her marriage with Ruskin. And I was just floored by it. And I thought, oh my gosh, these people lived and breathed, and here they are right in front of me. So I've always looked for that, and somewhere along the line I saw those the photographs of Jane Morris, which again, like seeing her as a real person and not just Rossetti's interpretation of her, again, just like it's something to cling to and relate to. Like maybe I can, like maybe she's like I am. Like we have the same thoughts and the same emotions.
Certainly reading those poems is the first time that you ever are really able to think that,
With, yeah, Elizabeth Siddal, yeah.
because so many of the women from that era, they just are, right? You
Yeah.
see them as, you just see them,
Yeah.
right? You know, they're like, the men are doing something and the women just are, in this is how we see them in, galleries and museums, because Rossetti wrote a lot and everybody saved his every scrap of paper that he wrote, because, like, oh, here's a genius. And everyone else, the women in this world are kind of two-dimensional. And then finding those poems suddenly made her, for me anyway, three-dimensional, like a real person.
Yeah, there's a tangibility with Siddal's poetry, but like you said, it's really quite relatable, really quite human. And it's, well, I've explored it in some of my work as very song-like, very almost drawn from English folk music in some ways, lots of Siddal's work, a very some quite rootsy and quite earthy about her poetry. And I think that comes across in some of the proofs that you've sent over to me of your book. It's fascinating. So what I think what I want to ask you is, how have you used the poetry to shape the photographs and to shape this project? And could you give us some examples?
Well, I think that one thing is that they're not imitations, or they're not illustrations of her poems, right? We didn't read a poem and say, all right, let's go out and, we'll make this into a reality. It was us reading the poems every day and then being in a place that to us was new and unique. Like, we were tourists in London, essentially. And we were also around all of the places that they were. We were within blocks or miles of the places that they lived and the things that they saw. And so one of the things that I was really fascinated about was how, modern London and old London exist on top of each other. So it was important to me that the photos that we were taking were not imitations of Pre-Raphaelite images. So in them, you see modern London if it was there, you know, peeking through whatever places that we found to do these photos that were inspired by the moods of her poetry rather than, you know, the actual, we're going to try and make these words real.
Yeah, I think that comes across, and I think from looking through the proofs you sent me, those are my favorite ones. I think where you get just the snippets of the graffiti in the background, or the just a just out of sight, you know, there's the London skyline or the modern bridges, you know, they come across, that comes across really well. I think you've done a really good job actually of layering up the different histories of London. And it was fascinating, Trillian, just seeing you. You're almost like a time traveler in some of them that's poked their head
That's how
across
it,
the
yeah, when I
centuries.
look at the images, yeah, it just comes across that the figure, my figure, is fairly timeless just in what I'm wearing and the treatment of it photographically. And then it's in this modern London, and I love that aspect of it, that it just transcends time, that you're aware of time. And yeah, the project definitely morphed, because I think originally, at least for me, I thought, oh, we'll visit like Red House and we'll visit Cheyne Walk and we'll like really try to recreate some of these images. And so I even brought, you know, I packed away a like a kind of a medieval style gown, and I thought, you know, we'll really like lean into the Pre-Raphaelite aspect of these images. And then once we were there, we were staying in East London, and just kind of for various reasons found ourselves kind of wanting to just stay in East London. East London, part of it was that it rained torrentially every day, almost every day we were there. And so a lot of the trains were shut down on days when we had planned to travel out into the country. So we were marooned a bit in our flat.
I also think that I didn't want to, I realized I didn't want to spend a lot of time in places that had placards and tourists in it
Yes.
looking at stuff, right? And while we had all of London as, you know, as our photo studio, so suddenly it became less and less important to try and go to these specific places, because everywhere we went is a place that, you know, these people could have stood at. You know, I'm sure that Elizabeth Siddal crossed the Blackfriars Bridge and, you know, it's
Yes.
on that side of the Thames where we were at some point.
Right.
So it became less important to visit, you know, these touchstone places where we knew that there would be a lot of other people doing the same thing. And like Trillian said, this really evolved as we got there. I think initially, when we first got the camera, and we it was kind of a joke. And it's like, we're gonna take all these, you know, take some Pre-Raphaelite painting photos, and it was fun. But then once we got to London, it got serious. When we started reading these poems and thinking about it, it was no longer a joke. And the picture started coming out really good.
Yeah. And there are so many, like just realizing how many of those Pre-Raphaelite circles overlap. You know, once I wasn't really familiar with Watts's work, and we visited some family out in Surrey, and they took us to the Watts Gallery, and then suddenly Watts was everywhere, and realizing what his connection was then to the Rossettis as well. And just by the time we left, it just felt like they were our old friends. And we'd go to the V&A Museum or the Tate, and we'd see like these snippets of these friends we had met along the way. And it was just, yeah, it was amazing.
I'm sure this happens to everybody who is listening to this podcast, right? That you go to one of these museums and you look at a painting and you know all of the backstory and who the people were and, you know, how they were connected to each other. And that had only just started to happen, you know, to us. And it certainly, you know, 80% of the people who are listening to your podcast know Elizabeth Siddal as a painter. And you know, some number of them know her as a poet, but like outside of the people who are listening to this podcast, like that's completely unknown. You know, like If I went walked out on my street and asked 100 people who Elizabeth Siddal was, like no, none of them would know, and certainly, even fewer than none would know that she was a painter and a poet. So when you fill yourself up with all of these little details, and then you go into a museum or you see a place, you have all of that backstory, and it makes things, seem larger and
Richer and just enriches the whole experience.
I'm sure I'm telling you something that you experience every single day.
Well, I think when you go to London, it's so immersive, and you're surrounded by it. There's history on every street, and that's not even pre-Raphaelite history. That can be very, very old history up to quite contemporary sort of events. So to be in a city, I imagine, where I imagine for yourselves from America to come there for the first time with pre-Raphaelites at the front of your brain must be overwhelming in so much to see, so much to do, and so many connections to make. And then if you can get out, like you're saying, if you go out to Surrey, you can go out across the country, you really start to see how all these networks overlaid onto each other, and they all knew each other up and down the country. So, I bet that was a fascinating experience for you.
It was, and also just to see the art, the Lady of Shalott at the Tate in person, and to see the tapestry, the oh, Waterhouse's use of paint and the detail of the tapestry. It was awe-inspiring, and this is an image I've known for decades, but to see it in person
I
was.
think one of the big themes that comes out on the podcast quite regularly is you need to see these works actually in person to appreciate them. You can't get it over on a print in a book. It just doesn't translate as well. It's the color and the richness that you need to. It's an experience rather than a painting.
I had no idea how large the Lady of Shalott was. It's a gigantic painting. And I certainly had this experience in the Tate, knowing that I was going to turn a corner at some point and I was going to see Ophelia there, and I'm sure a lot of people do this, right? And so there was a great bit of anticipation every time I turned around a corner. And then you do see it, and there's a bunch of people crowded in front of it, who've had the exact same experience as you, waiting to see this painting and then rushing over to look at it. So the physical act of going to see it is also a piece of art.
Yes, very much. And then you can layer that with the historical approach that the Victorians would have viewed it very differently by candlelight and in different lighting and in different I don't know, background colors on the walls, a different experience entirely, which would be a fun thing to play with. I know you're into the blurring of the history.
And then the poetry, when you take this, little copy of Elizabeth Siddal's book and you sit out under a tree and read it in the summer, that's the same experience that everybody has. You don't need to go anywhere to have that. So we wanted to be able to give people that experience.
Your photography series, do you have any particular ones you'd like to talk about? Any favorites or any treasures?
I do kind of have a favorite. It's interesting, like the ones that I liked were never the ones that were popularly popular. There's a
That's
there...
always my experience with Kyle. Like he's looking at things from, a very visual photographer's stance, and oftentimes it does not coalesce.
So there's one of Trillian at Mile End Park, and she's got a very modern umbrella, which was at the house we were staying at because it was raining out, and it's a clear umbrella, and she's opening the umbrella. And a lot of it looks kind of pre-Raphaelite inspired, except for this very, very modern umbrella. And I loved that picture. And I thought that I was like, oh, that one should be our cover image, and nobody agreed. So I love that one. Do you have favorites?
I do. This probably makes me not an ideal model, but I really love the ones where you can't tell it's me, where I am just that figure in the landscape. So the cover image actually is one of my favorites, where I'm just walking down the alleyway And I could be anyone, just this figure in time. And the other favorite I would say is the one where I'm just curled up on the banks of the Thames, looking out,
Yes.
and modern London is behind me.
Yes. That one stuck out for me as well. This was one of the ones where I thought you looked like a time traveler completely against the sort of modern cityscape of London. It's incredible. I also really liked that you've got one where I think are you on the, I'm assuming it's the Thames on the foreshore when the tide's out and you're looking at the bridges. Yeah, I really liked that. That was beautiful.
Yeah, there were a few there. That was when we were initially going to the Tate, and we saw the Tate on the map, and we walked out there, and it was actually the Tate Modern. So we had quite a walk after that to get to the Tate we were looking for. So we took a few pictures on the bridge there.
Yeah, and on the sand too. Yeah, and I love those because it's so incongruous. I think most people probably don't think of London as having a beach, having the sand along the river. So it has this feeling that, like, how could this be possible? Like, how was this manipulated in some way?
Right, we have rivers in Philly, but you can't go up
Yeah,
to them.
they're barricaded. Yeah, you can only sit on the like concrete.
Well, that's a real Victorian experience in and of itself, you know, to go down onto the Thames, sort of the banks and some of the things that get washed up there. You know, it was an old like the real poor would do it in old London called mudlarking, and they'd sift through and try to find treasure and sell it. And it's quite a hobby now. Lots of medieval Victorian artifacts still get washed up, coins, nails, shoes. It's quite a thing.
Do you need a special permit to mudlark, or can anyone do it?
Oh, I really don't know. I imagine I know there's if you find objects over a certain value. So if you found gold, I think you have to declare it. But people go down there and they just pull up medieval bolts and nails and hairpins and you know, that's a
Love it.
real graspable piece of history.
Yeah.
We did bring a couple rocks home.
You did some interesting rocks with like holes worn through the center. It's so smooth. I
Oh
was
yeah,
gonna put a chain through one and wear it as a necklace because it's just perfect.
they're called hagstones. They're supposed to be good luck, like a good luck charm.
Ooh.
So,
You brought some good luck home. There you go.
could you tell us a little bit about the projects you've been involved in the past? Because reading your bio, it just sounds fascinating, and I know you've been involved in similar projects with work at sort of around Pre-Raphaelitism. So could you tell us a bit more about it?
I think in the old days, I mean, I grew up in the era of traditional publishing, and what would happen would be you would have an idea for something, and you would go to a publisher and they would say no, and you would go to another publisher and they would say no, and you would go to another publisher and they would hand you a big bag with dollar signs on it, you know, and you would take all this money and you would go and do your thing. And I think as the internet came about, I realized that I was having, you know, I would have a gallery show and I would work for months to frame 20 photos and hang them on a wall. And 600 people would come to the gallery show and it would be fantastic. And I would have a wonderful time and I'd sell three of them. And while this was all happening, I was posting stuff to my blog and like 20,000 people were seeing it. So, like, you know, the dynamic was shifting. And this is in the, you know, the 90s and, you
Early
know,
two thousands.
early 2000s and certain, and, you know, and through then. And so it got to a point where for some things, it was maybe even easier for me to say to, you know, 5,000 people, would you give me $4 to do this? Rather than to say to one publisher, would you give me $20,000 to do this? So we still do a lot of traditional publishing with publishers, but then there's a lot of this one-off stuff that's kind of maybe very personal or something that I don't think a publisher would be necessarily interested in or that we want to have complete control over. And so For a lot of those, we have gone to crowdfunding to ask, find people who would be interested in helping us out in a small way. You find a thousand $4 Medicis, rather than one big one. So do you want to talk about some of the stuff that we've done?
Yeah, I think another aspect too is Kyle has always loved, and then I came along for the ride, loved collaborations with writers. So this is kind of a perfect continuation, collaborating with Elizabeth Siddal. But one of the projects that came to mind was, I forget what year it was, but it's been maybe 12 years ago. We were at a science fiction convention because we were doing a lot of work with science fiction writers, and Kyle happened to meet Elizabeth Baer
On an escalator.
on an escalator. She was going up and he was coming down, and they recognized each other, and Kyle said, "We should collaborate on something." And she said, "Yes, something that has to do with time travel." And Kyle said, "And levitation
She said, and madness.
and madness." So we live nowhere near each other. I think Elizabeth Baer's in New England somewhere.
We only met for those 30 seconds.
Right. So then Kyle and I went to work on just taking probably a dozen photographs loosely tied together. Usually someone was levitating. We had recently bought a mannequin that is in our living room. And so we knew that the mannequin had to play some role in it. And then we sent the images to Elizabeth Baer, and she wrote this incredible story. And a piece of the story is on the back of each image. So the idea was that you would collect these postcards and you'd have this image. And I think they actually stand by their own.
They
You
do every single one.
don't need all 12 images or the whole story, but a piece of the story, which was so creatively, beautifully written, is on each image.
Heartfelt and emotional, and
So,
from beginning to end. Yeah,
yeah.
that was a good one.
Yeah, and it's called Veronique is Visiting from Paris. And it's just this poetic little gem of a collaboration with Elizabeth Baer. So that's the one that struck me as being most similar to this, that you have this like point of departure, or yeah, this moment of inspiration, and then you see where it takes you.
Yeah, and we've done a couple movies of things that Netflix would never pay us to do.
Yeah, as a performer, I particularly love 19th century drama. So I've always adored Ibsen. I went to Norway to do like a to go to his house basically and see his grave. I've always loved Chekhov, and but Kyle and I have collaborated on two or th
Three.
three three now three Ibsen projects. And a Mary Shelley project, a play that I wrote about Mary Shelley that was commissioned by the Rosenbach Museum here in Philadelphia.
Which, if you haven't been to, you should go to.
It's amazing. They have just a phenomenal collection of original manuscripts.
So Dracula is there.
The
Oh,
original
amazing.
Dracula.
Frankenstein is there. Ulysses is there.
It's incredible. And his brother, Rosenbach's brother, was an art collector. And so when we were researching the Rossettis, we saw a reference that Rosenbach's brother had bought a Rossetti
Sketch.
sketch, that then someone said, "Well, that's a fake. It's not real." So we've been intrigued. Like, was it a fake?
Is it still
Is
there?
it still there?
And
Are
it
they saying it's Rossetti? Is it
right.
Rossetti?
And it wasn't a scholar who told him it was a fake, it was a collector. So that, we found this letter. So I'm like, where is this now?
There might be a hidden Rossetti sketch out
Oh
there.
yeah.
Yes.
Well, certainly one of the things that, we've discovered is that Rossetti was drawing Elizabeth Siddal all the time. And he called these guggums, these drawings of her guggums. And multiple people mention it. And William Michael mentions that they litter the studio. And I imagine, and we thought about this while we were there, that, Rossetti must have given a bunch of them away or traded them off. And there are probably dozens of them unknown just in attics, all in South London.
Probably. They do crop up every now and then. Hidden pre-Raphaelite works, particularly sketches, paperworks, and letters. So you never know. It might be worth d digging around in the archives there, seeing what you can come up with. So let's go back to your main project, your Elizabeth Siddal project. So can you tell us a bit more about it in terms of when it's coming out, how we can get involved, and I want you to tell us a bit about how you've actually arranged the layout of the book itself, because you've got something quite fancy that you can do, haven't you, that I quite like.
Sure. So everything is done-ish. The book is laid out, the book is proofread, the book is edited, and this is all three of the things that we're making. So we are making a hardback book of the photographs. It has five poems in it. We're making a chap book, which is a small pocket-sized book of the mostly complete poems of Elizabeth Siddal. And that's kind of a high quality, lovely looking book. And then there's also a zine, which is just copied on kind of nice copier paper. And it's in two 16-page signatures, saddle stitched. And I think one of the cool things about it is that it will arrive with uncut pages. So you can pretend you're a Victorian poetry lover and cut the pages of your own Elizabeth Siddal tiny little poetry collection. It fits in your back pocket or your front pocket.
And the other cool thing about the zine is that it has her artwork in the back of it. So there are copies of her artwork as well as her poetry.
And so we are using the crowdfunding platform Kickstarter to make this happen. We've used Kickstarter before, and I think the unique thing about Kickstarter is that when people pledge money to a project, you don't get charged unless the project makes all of the money that it needs to launch.
Okay.
So we're asking for US$3,500. I don't know how much that is in pounds, probably 3,000 pounds, something like that. And if people pledge and that £3,000 is not raised, you don't get charged. And so what that ensures you is that you're not going to send money to somebody who's not going to be able to make their project.
Yes.
So you're not risking anything. So our Kickstarter is going to go live on April 4th, and it'll go for 30 days. And there are some early bird specials in there. So there's some things that are discounted, but in limited editions that people can grab if they get there early enough. And we will put the information for how to get to it on kylecassidy.com, which is my website. And if you're listening to this after the Kickstarter has passed, you're listening to this in 2025 or 2027, we'll put information on that website to show you where to get any extra leftover books if there are leftover books.
Yeah, and we can also put any links actually on social media, and also in the blurb, in the write up for the podcast as well. So,
Thank you. Great.
have a look underneath.
And maybe there's some pictures there.
Absolutely. We can, if you send some, well, I've got some pictures from you. If you let me know, we can use those on social media, and
For
that'll be a
sure.
big draw for you. I think you'll enjoy those. So, supposed to wrap up. Have you got anything you'd like to promote? Any websites? Anywhere you'd like to send people?
So I'm Kyle Cassidy everywhere. So I'm Kyle Cassidy on Instagram, and that's my website too, kylecassidy.com. So you can find me there, and I would love to hear from anybody who loves the Pre-Raphaelites.
And my main site is actually jennifersummerfield.com, which is my acting website. So that's where all my theatrical projects are.
Your trillion stars on Instagram.
I'm Trillion Stars on Instagram.
You can see all of her photos from when we were in England.
Yes.
All of her.
All the cat photos, because we were cat sitting. So lots of cat pictures of Roo, little baby Roo, and the fish that we were feeding. Yeah, it's a lovely time in London.
Brilliant. Well, thank you both so much for coming to join us today. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having us.
And we can certainly link and share all of the Kickstarter funding for you, and we can make a big push on it when your book
Yay.
is available. So
Fabulous.
thanks again, and please stay in touch.
Thank you so much,
Thank you.
Carl. It's been wonderful.
Thank you all very much for listening today, and please ensure you check out Kyle and Trillian's Kickstarter, which we'll link below. We'll speak to you next time. Goodbye. Take care.